It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
It is Cofield and Company down here at T-Mobile Arena, Toshiba Plaza. If you're on your way to the Lakers and Warriors game, make sure you stop by. Say hello. Steve Cofield on his way to the coach's show. You can go see him as well if you're heading on over here to check out the Lakers and the Warriors tonight. A lot of people have their attention on VGK as well. The Stanley Cup final rematch against the Capitals 0-0 here in the first period, although the Caps just went on the penalty on the power play. So we'll check that out, see if they're able to do anything with that. But right now we're very excited because Paul Sewald joins us, the former Bishop Gorman star, current New York Met, just wrapped up the season, and I have a little bit of an interesting encounter from last year with Paul. But first of all, how you doing, Bram?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. And it's interesting that the Knights are playing the Caps, because you got to go to a final game, didn't you?
I did. So the way our schedule worked out, as soon as they went to the finals against, and we realized it was going to be the Capitals, I took a look and I said, we have a day off while they're in D.C. You know, I was kind of thinking, all right, how can I make this work? And I said, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I got to make it work. So I took a train down from New York right to D.C. And went to Game 4 at the Verizon Center. And it was, you know, it was absolutely unbelievable. Unfortunately, we didn't win, of course, as everybody knows, but the experience alone was unbelievable.
And I think the highlight of the night had to be running into me and my coworker Ron Kantowski at the pizza place right across the street.
Of course it was. Yes.
I would think that was it. But just how much have you been able to embrace this? You know, it's back in your hometown. Obviously, you're not here. You're kind of playing all year. But how have you been able to kind of jump on board and kind of follow a team like this? And how excited were you just to know that there was going to be a major league team here in Vegas?
You know, it's tough because, you know, as I grew up here, you don't have a team that's from here other than maybe UNLV. So obviously you're a Rebels fan, but not a professional sports team in one of the four major sports. So then, you know, when you get to embrace your city and really support a team from Vegas, it was a blast for all of us that grew up kind of cheering for, you know, maybe a team here, a team there. And that's like, this is my hometown team. And all of us fully backed it, and it was amazing. The whole city did. How well they played was just a bonus. I would have been a fan if they wouldn't have made the playoffs or anything like that. So it's been really cool to just have a professional team like this in our city, and I think it's awesome.
For sure. Now, we were just talking before you came on, and I want to get to, even though the 51s are not with the Mets anymore, you did spend some time with the 51s at Cashman. I want to get your thoughts on that in a second. But rumors were out today, just kind of flying around, and very much in the rumor stages, that there was plans to build a Major League Stadium at the site of the Rio and bring a Major League team here. I mean, did you hear that at all? And what would your immediate thoughts be when you hear that?
You know, I haven't heard that rumor. You know, there's obviously talk in Major League Baseball. We want to expand. We want to get two more teams to make it 32, which would be amazing for the game. And so, obviously, all of us are in on getting a new team. If it's in Las Vegas, that would be incredible. I can't even imagine, with all the Major League talent that we have coming from Las Vegas, now to have a Major League team there, I think would just grow the game amateurly here, you know, for kids. More than we ever could have imagined.
There you go. Paul Sewald just wrapped up the season with the Mets. Now, I did reference you spent some time with the 51s and certainly kind of grew up watching them as well. What are your thoughts about Cashman Field going bye-bye at a new stadium coming? Even though it's not the Mets organization anymore, I mean, this is something that you've that's kind of been a part of your life. And I know there's a lot of trashing of Cashman Field. Was it really that bad?
You know, since I was there for the last 3 years, it was pretty tough. But you got to think, Don and the gang were saying we're saving our money for the new stadium. So they're not going to make improvements on a stadium when they're trying to make a new stadium. So, you know, I completely understand their side. You know, and ultimately, that's what your goal was to get a brand new stadium. So they're not going to put money in here, money in there to kind of fix it up and make it okay. Let's just wait till we get a new stadium. It was not the best AAA facility in the league, but ultimately, being in my hometown, you know, I think I was even more a little naive to it. and saying it wasn't that bad. I know my teammates and I were not super excited about the clubhouse situation in the field. But, it's just that's what's going to make Las Vegas Ballpark so amazing. It's going to be amazing. The A's have no idea how good they have it.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. It's coming soon, Las Vegas Ballpark out there in Summerlin. So, Paul, I know the season just wrapped up, but the playoffs are going on. Is it difficult to watch the playoff games? I'm sure you want to be playing in them. So is it tough to watch? Do you still keep up on it? How do you handle the postseason?
So, last year was my first year in the big leagues. That was the first time I had ever spent October sitting on the couch watching, thinking I should have been there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a weird feeling. It is tough because ultimately when you go to spring training, every single team wants to go to the World Series and win it. But when you watch other teams in the playoffs, it's tough. It's like, that's where I want to be. But it usually works as like a little motivation that's where we want to be. Now what can I do to help the Mets get there next year? How can I be a part of a team that's playing in October that I'm not sitting on my couch watching, I'm playing in the playoffs?
So what does your off season look like then along those lines, knowing that that's the goal, and what can I do to help my team? What do you do in the off season?
You got to take a little bit of time off. I take October and don't really do anything, kind of take a mental and physical break away from the game because, it's every single day from the time you get to spring training, essentially. So it's good to take 1 month and kind of reload, regroup, kind of do some relaxing, traveling, that sort of thing. And then about November 1st starts, and then I get in the gym and I start to work out. And it's a three-month grind to try and get my body to the strongest I can possibly be so that hopefully in October, when I'm pitching, my body's not breaking down. I feel just as good in October as I do in June and July and that sort of thing. And then, about December 1st, you start to throw. You give yourself a month or so. And then, when the new year comes, it's really full-blown because it's really only 5-6 weeks until spring training starts. So you're throwing bullpens and that sort of thing. So now is a little bit of time for me. But soon, before I know I'm going to be in the gym and I'm going to be working.
So how did your body feel toward the end of the year? Did you feel like you were ready for a full season like that, or did you feel like you were starting to tire out a little bit?
I felt great. It's just a testament to, talking to guys that have been there before while I was in the minor league, saying you got to take it to a new level. The minor league season kind of ends September 1st. The major league season is a full another month, and that's another month of grinding. So essentially, just talking to a bunch of friends that have been there and said, yeah, you might have felt good in August in the minor league season, but just know you got to be, you got to take it to a new level. And I felt just as good at the end of September as I did during the regular season. So I feel like I'm going to stay with the same program I've been doing, and hopefully I'll be ready to go and pitch in meaningful games in September and hopefully October next year.
That is Paul Sewald, Bishop Gorman guy, who now just wrapped up the season with the Mets. I know the first thing people look at, and we talk all the time about a win-loss record being completely overrated stat, but when people see year zero, I know people talk about it all the time. How frustrating is it to still have that zero in the win column right now for you?
It's pretty frustrating, but being a teammate of Jacob deGrom's made it a little bit easier to realize that the win loss doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot. It's such a team stat. And, all you can do is keep a team in the game. Sorry, you were cutting off there. You were cut off.
Oh, sorry.
So I was trying to fill in. Sorry. You were talking about DeGrom when we lost you there, I think, for a second. But it's amazing how people still look at that as this big. And it is important, wins and losses, certainly. But the actual win-loss stat for a pitcher is so overrated. And I think sometimes it does. And I'll just ask you, does it wear on you? Do you think about it a lot?
I don't think about it at all. I go out there and I try and pitch well. Most of the time I'm focused on getting the hitter out. It doesn't matter if we're up 20, if we're tied, if we're down one. As a relief pitcher, you just go out there and you're one inning and you try and, make it as sharp as you possibly can. And ultimately, it's unfortunate I don't have any wins, but ultimately, especially a reliever, it's not judged on your win-loss record. So I'm not really worried about it. Hopefully I get one soon.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You have a lot more chances to lose games than you do to win them, and as far as a win-loss goes.
Yes, and hopefully, think about this. You come in with a one-run lead. You don't give up a run. You just essentially do your job, but you don't get rewarded with a win from it. Okay, you give up a run, and then you don't do your job, and it's tied, and then they ultimately score while you're pitching, and you get the win. you know, that's not necessarily how I want to be judged, is giving up runs while we're, you know, up one, and then ultimately we score and then I get a win. You know, I'd rather just keep the lead, get a hold, and let the starter get the win.
There you go. And you did get in the save column this year.
I did. A couple times. You know, that part as a reliever is pretty nice. Like, it's the chance to, you know, essentially close out a game. And that's before, is pitching in the ninth, tenth, whatever, late in the game, and getting that save and closing it down. That's the real adrenaline rush as a reliever.
For sure. Paul Sewald just wrapped up the season with the Mets. Gorman guy. Now that I just thought about saying it, have you followed the football program at Gorman? And are, you know, a ton of success this year, ran into some really tough opponents. Have you been following along with what they're doing?
You know, I try to watch when they're on TV. You know, it's tough because I'm gone for the first 6 months or six weeks of their season, and we all know that's where they play more competition similar to themselves. So then I kind of miss those games and don't really get a chance to go out there and really watch anymore. But, I follow along a little bit. That's what Twitter's for. I kind of check to see how they're doing. You know, it's been fun to kind of follow along, you know, as you get a little bit older, and kind of brag to guys like, oh, yeah, that's my high school on TV, you know, it's 40 to nothing and that sort of thing. So that part's pretty cool. You know, but the older you get, you kind of fall off a little bit. But I try to check it out every once in a while and see how they're doing.
So for you, what do you see your role being long term?
You know, I don't throw 100 miles an hour, so, you know, you're mostly not going to be put in that closer role. For me, you know, it's a little bit of a long relief. It's a little bit of short relief, kind of specializing against right-handers. You know, over the course of my career, I've been a guy who comes in maybe in the fourth inning and tries to eat up innings for three innings, or a guy who comes in the seventh and has to face, you know, the middle of the lineup, but it's all right-handed hitters, that sort of thing. That's kind of my role as a middle reliever, and it's a great time to be a middle reliever. Baseball has never rewarded and valued relievers as high as they do right now. Obviously, that's what sabermetrics is telling us, is if I can go out there and throw, you know, one quick inning over and over again, that's ultimately better than letting the starters go three, four times to the lineup. So it's a great spot to be in right now.
And as somebody that has that role in that kind of, you know, you know how important it is. I think teams know how important it is. I don't know if the general public understands how important those roles are, and we're seeing the expansion of them. What do you think about teams that are going through this whole new method of starting guys that are essentially middle relievers or even closers, and just totally changing the way we look at baseball?
I don't want to say I came up with the idea.
Oh, boy.
Like 6 years ago when we were in high A, we had a starting staff who was so good, but they had trouble in the first inning. We were sitting down in the bullpen like, you know, it would be great if we could just throw like a reliever who would just throw a quick first inning, and then you get the starter in there. Now, did I ever think that a team would do that? No. But the Rays showed us it works. They had one of the lowest ERAs in baseball, if not the lowest, as soon as they started with the opener. So, you know, when you do the math and you think about, let your maybe eighth inning guy throw the first inning, and then you let the starter face the 5 through 9 part of the lineup three times instead of the 1 through 4, it makes a lot of sense. Now,
of course it does.
Old school people will say that's totally ridiculous, and I understand the concept can be weird, but ultimately, isn't it just to give up the least amount of runs and score them as many runs as you can? And if that concept works, and you, instead of taking your starter out after 4 2/3 or 5 1/3, when you just let him go 5 innings and then you're to the 7th inning anyway after a starter. So, you know, I think it's something that a couple of teams have looked into, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I think it has to do a little bit with your personnel. But, you know, I like the concept, especially if I could get a couple starts. That'd be nice.
Of course. No question about it. Do you think starters are okay with it?
I think no, because it is a little bit of a ego thing, like you want to come out of the gate going. Sometimes I think, now I'm not saying that Jacob DeGrom should pitch the 2nd to the 9th,
right?
But if you have your 4th and 5th starters who may be, you know, a swing guy, if you have somebody injured that's like from AAA up and down, I think if you just look at, and you're realistic, like, okay, maybe if I can go 5 innings and help my team from the 2nd to the 6th, That's just as good as going the fifth, first to the fifth. So I think it takes guys who just are ultimately like, you know, I do everything, I'll do anything that I can to help a team win, and you know, there's a ton of guys that are willing to do that.
You mentioned DeGrom a couple of times. How like impressive was it to see that close up this season?
I don't even think I understand how good his season was until I'll look back in 20 years and say, oh my gosh, man, it's like, every fifth day he went out there and we went out to the bullpen saying, hey, we don't have to do anything today, guys. Let's just kick back and relax for seven innings and then we'll be ready to go in the eighth inning. And it's like, we took it for granted a little bit, but yeah. It just is, you know, it was unbelievable to watch. He just was so good every single time he went out there.
What do you do in the bullpen?
Well, we watch the game, obviously.
I've sat close to enough bullpens. I don't think that's the case.
We, you know, hopefully we have a staff.
Oh, we lost him. All right, that was Paul Sewald. Awesome, awesome stuff from Paul. We'll connect with him again very soon. That guy is amazing. Like I said, ran into him last year before the Golden Knights game in the Stanley Cup Final. Gorman kid, played with the 51s quite a bit, finished the season with the Mets. Really, really, really good dude. I want to make sure we stress that because, you know,